magic carpets made of. All those insecurities that have held me down for so long. I can't say I found a cure for these, but at least I know them, so they're not so strong. Look for your dreams in heaven, but what the hell are you supposed to do when they come true?
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Arrests have been made in the murder of a Teamsters Union organizer in El Salvador, but the case hasn't been totally resolved yet. Salvadoran police arrested the mother-in-law of the organizer, Gilberto Soto, and several others suspected of being involved were also arrested. Police in El Salvador say the killing was from a family dispute. Soto's mother-in-law, Rosa Elba Ortiz, is accused of contracting Soto's killing. She denies it. Teamsters president James Hoffa and AFL-CIO president John Sweeney both suspect Soto was assassinated for trying to organize workers in El Salvador, a country that has a long and bloody history of hostility to labor unions.
While American workers worry about their jobs being outsourced to India, Indians worry about the type of jobs being created in their country. A delegation of Indian labor leaders are currently touring the United States and meeting with labor leaders in this country to discuss the future of job sharing. Ashim Roy, a representative of General Electric Workers in India, says the number of jobs multinational companies destroy in the U.S. is far greater than the jobs they create in India.
Manufacturing plants and production areas in India are getting linked up in a global supply chain. And so some of the earlier forms of unionization and building up contracts and looking at labor rights or labor standards along the supply chain. And that's the real issue that we're going to really discuss with unions and with organizations here. But more than that, we also would like to address some of the issues that the debate on outsourcing has brought out and want to kind of have engagements with unions which are involved with organizing the outsourcing workers here and in general have, you know, discussions with people who are having a viewpoint on outsourcing.
St. Louis teachers may be on strike for Christmas. A strike authorization vote is set for December 15th. The American Federation of Teachers says even though teacher strikes are illegal under Missouri law, it won't stop the teachers from walking off their jobs if that's what they vote to do. The AFT's Mary Armstrong says America was founded on civil disobedience, so the union won't be deterred from using it if that's what the members want. St. Louis teachers are making it clear, though, that their preference is to return to the bargaining table and work out a fair and acceptable contract. St. Louis teachers are not paid as well as suburban teachers, and that's one of the issues on the table.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Consumers are nervous about jobs, and therefore they aren't shopping. The Conference Board reported last week that consumer confidence dropped for the fourth consecutive month. Walmart was one of the hardest hit retailers, with only a 0.7 sales increase in stores that have been open for more than a year. Sears and JCPenney did the best in beating Wall Street predictions. Sears posted a whopping 2.8% gain in sales, while Wall Street was predicting a decline of 0.3% for the chain.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
George W. likes to live in his own world. In fact, being Bush seems like a joyful, almost dreamlike experience. Reality, for example, never intrudes into his consciousness. And his lies, even as big as whoppers, seem most sincerely to be believed by him. I have no doubt that he thinks he served in the National Guard, for example. For his second term, George is drawing his world even tighter, moving swiftly to eliminate advisors and officials who might tell him things he doesn't want to hear, further shielding him from bothersome realities in the world. Colin Powell was quickly ushered out the door, even though he had dutifully and unwittingly lied for Bush about those non-existent weapons of mass destruction. Powell was always questioning the blind rush into the war, so George has now plucked this irritant from his administration. Condi Rice, his worshipful national security advisor, has been moved into Powell's chair, and Bush can certainly trust that she won't disturb his consciousness with anything that goes against his neocon ideology. Likewise, his longtime legal lackey, Al Gonzalez, has been dispatched to head the Justice Department, where he can grind out memos to rationalize and legalize any little old thing that strikes George's noggin. Al, you might remember, is the guy who wrote the White House memo saying that torturing Iraqi prisoners was legally okie-dokie. Then there's the CIA, which kept sending intelligence reports to the White House warning that the Iraqi invasion and occupation would have messy consequences. George didn't like to hear that, so now he's put political hack Porter Goss at the CIA helm. Goss is purging top agents who have disagreed with Bush's disastrous policies, warning all CIA employees that their job is to, quote, support the administration and its policies in our work. This is Jim Hightower saying, there. Don't you feel better knowing that George won't be bothered by any unwanted advice or unpleasant reports?
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's this.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, top of the week to you. Happy Monday. Today, the 6th of December, 2004. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, this is going to really stir up the folks in America who, well, some would say the conspiracy folks, and others would say those who are observing the political scene, and the parallels between Ukraine and the United States. Here we have in the Ukraine. I got to stop calling it the Ukraine, right? It's now they call it Ukraine. Anyhow, in Ukraine, of course they had this kind of dicey election, and it was the way it got pointed out that it was dicey was because of the exit polls, and there are a lot of folks saying, well, you know, we had exit polls in the United States that said that actually John Kerry won. Why aren't we in the streets? And others saying, get over it. And, yeah, there's that debate. But anyhow, now there are also folks in the United States, and I am not among them, by the way, who say that the Bush administration was somehow behind 9/11. I think that the Bush administration allowed 9/11 to happen by virtue of a combination of gross, obscene incompetence and a series of actions that the Bush administration took very, very early on to pull back from investigations that were being done of Saudi nationals by the Clinton administration and by the FBI and the CIA, because the Bush family had such long-standing and deep economic ties to the Saudi royal family. Over $1 billion over the last 30 years has been transferred from the Saudi royal family and its various arms and the bin Laden family to the Bush family or investment vehicles like the Carlyle Group that are affiliated with the Bush family. And so as everybody knows, I mean, this has just been well reported that early on the Bush administration, George W. Bush, shut down or stopped or impeded a lot of the investigations of Saudi nationals doing nasty stuff potentially in the United States. And that helped lead to 9/11. So, you know, that's I don't think that you have to be a conspiracy theorist to acknowledge that. This is stuff that is in the mainstream media. But anyhow, here's where the crossover happens. In the Ukraine, this international, Kiev, Ukraine, Dateline, December 6th, this breaking news. In fact, it hasn't made your newspaper yet. It probably hasn't even made CNN yet. Just grabbed it off the wire. Britain's Independent Monday revealed plans by the Ukraine government to stage a terror attack and blame it on the opposition party. Very entertaining. Senior unidentified government official told the Independent one of the plans is to blow up a pipeline and blame it on opposition supporters. The official said a senior member of the government had been appointed to overseeing terrorist acts for the Moscow-based candidate and current Prime Minister Viktor Yanukovych. And Yanukovych's backers fear the prospect of losing to Yushchenko, who is backed by the West, and they're prepared to plunge the country into economic chaos. Is this starting to sound more and more like the United States? The report said supporters of Yanukovych and outgoing President Leonid Kuchma are also playing on in fears that inflation will wipe out people's savings as it did after the disintegration of the Soviet Union. Scare people enough, and you can get political power. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson: the care of human life and happiness, and not their destruction, is the first and only object of good government. That's an excellent one for the day. In fact, I want to ask the question this hour, and we'll get into this as we go throughout the day. In fact, we've got a lot of interesting things here for the next couple of hours. Are poverty, disease, and ignorance scourges, as liberals like Dwight Eisenhower would say, or are they simply the result of bad people being lazy, which is what conservatives would say? You know, the Calvinistic theology that people who are rich because they're morally superior, and people who are poor because they are morally inferior. This is the underpinning, the core foundational underpinning of Bush's economic policies, of most of right-wing talk radio, and of conservative philosophy. And many people believe it. It's been around for a long, long time. Many people believe that Darwin's theory of evolution was really a way of, well, not so much his theory of evolution, actually, but the his book, The Descent of Man, and those parts of that. Really, it had to do with trying to justify the idea that there is superiority to those who end up ruling. So are these scourges? What do you think? What does it take? By the way, our website, TomHartmann.com, if you want to drop into our chat room, well-populated already, just go to TomHartmann.com and click Live Chat, or you can visit the message boards and carry on conversations with folks literally all over the planet. And the telephone number for the program, our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. The direct line in, if you're outside the United States or you want to pay for the call yourself, oddly. The number is 802-229-2288. So, a lot of interesting things here, though. Let's start out. Let's with Florida. Jeb Bush's Florida. Jeb, of course, being one of the great neocons. I'm predicting Jeb will be running for president in 4 years. In fact, I'm predicting that there's a 50-50 chance that he will be vice president within 3 years. I had to write that down someplace, just in case it comes true. Then everybody, he's better than Gene Dixon, and then I'll have to go into the horoscope business or something. Anyhow, good old Jeb, the state agency charged with finding jobs for Floridians, has itself contracted for work that is being performed in India. You get this? In Florida, there's a state agency whose job is to help find work for people in Florida who are looking for work. And so what do? They sent that work of helping people find work to India. This is part of a large program that Jeb Bush has got of outsourcing and privatizing pretty much everything. This is the Bush philosophy. This is consistent with the philosophy of those who were, born on third base and thought they'd hit a triple. The conservative, that sounds like taking a shot at people who are born wealthy. And I shouldn't do that because John Kennedy saw through this. Franklin Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, both very wealthy guys, got it. That if you don't have a strong middle class, you can't have democracy. That the founder's idea, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, Jefferson intentionally took John Locke's treatise from 100 years earlier that said life, liberty, and the ownership of personal property, of private property, rather, and replaced that with happiness, that there was actual intent there, that there was a reason there, that there was something going on with that. There was a reason why he did this. So, anyhow, the revelation comes as Governor Jeb Bush's ambitious outsourcing and privatization campaign is drawing scrutiny in the state capitol with at least one Senate committee, preparing to examine more closely how the state farms out work to the private sector. State Senator Walter Skip Campbell, Democrat of Fort Lauderdale, has been pressing state agencies and the companies they contract with for information on these deals. They got records on this thing. See, this is, as I said, this is part of a larger program. Florida spends about 40% of their total $57 billion annual state budget. About 40% of that, $4 out of $10 that Floridians give to the state to perform state services, the state then hands to private corporations to do things, make profits, pay dividends to stockholders, give CEOs multimillion-dollar salaries, and on it goes, because they believe in this. They really believe in this. When Jeb Bush became governor in 98, from that point until today, he has succeeded in eliminating 10,400 Florida state jobs, replacing them with jobs that are being done by private corporations. He calls this the Center for Efficient Government. And, in fact, in many cases, I'm sure that people are doing the same work for lower pay. And you could say, gee, that's more efficient. But if you extend that logic out, you end up with an entire nation that is just getting progressively poorer and poorer. Very often, government jobs define the floor of wages, or they define the standard against which everybody wants to set their wages. This is one of the reasons why George W. is talking about outsourcing 800,000 jobs in the federal government, replacing, let's get rid of these government workers, he's saying, who are being paid $12, $15, $18 an hour, who are being, $20 an hour, who are making a living wage, who have benefits, who can raise a family on a single person's salary. That's not conservative family values. No, let's replace those with people who are working for $7-$8 an hour, and they got and they have to work two jobs, and they have to have two people working, and their kids come home to an empty house. That's conservative family values. So anyhow, they're rushed to outsource this stuff. $6.6 million of this state money went to a company called HCL Technologies. And HCL Technologies president, Rajiv Shashesh, is not providing any details. He didn't want to comment for this news story, but the work is being done in Mumbai, India, turns out. The work of helping find jobs for out-of-work Floridians is being done, is being paid for by Florida tax dollars and being done in India. Also today in the Wall Street Journal, the front page of the international section, India's latest gig now, debt collection. Because they can do it cheaper there, all kinds of companies now are starting to send their debt collection to India. Are we going to end up a nation where the only kind of job anybody can get is in retail? We're all selling each other things that are made someplace else, and basically we have no nation and no economy left. That's the direction we're heading. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tune program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4 four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Come together right now over me.
Right. And here's the question. You know, we talk about conservatives a lot on this program. Let's talk about liberals for a minute. In fact, let's quote somebody who called himself a militant liberal. Seriously, a former president of the United States, Dwight D. Eisenhower, referred to himself as a militant liberal. On November 16, 1953, he's president of the United States at this point, right? He wrote to John Foster Dulles that his administration was, quote, committed to policies that will bring the greatest good to the greatest number. This means that there must be lifted from the minds of men the fears of disaster, poverty, and old age. He campaigned for a single-payer national health care program. He raised the minimum wage. He extended the excess profits tax. He expanded public housing. He warned us about the dangers of the military-industrial complex. On May 2nd, 1956, again, as President of the United States, Dwight Eisenhower wrote a letter to his brother Edgar in which he said, and I quote, "Should any political party attempt to abolish Social Security, unemployment insurance, and eliminate labor laws and farm programs, you would not hear of that party again. There is a tiny splinter group, of course, that believes you can do those things. Among them are H.L. Hunt and a few other Texas oil millionaires, and an occasional politician or businessman from other areas. Their number is negligible, and they are stupid. Are poverty, disease, and ignorance scourges, or the result of lazy people?" Let's actually listen to what Dwight Eisenhower himself had to say. This in 1961, as he was leaving office, his farewell address, he offered a prayer for the nation, and I want you to listen for the word scourge. It comes a little bit into it. Here's Dwight Eisenhower.
May we be ever unswerving in devotion to principle, confident but humble with power, diligent in pursuit of the nation's great goals. To all the peoples of the world, I once more give expression to America's prayerful and continuing aspirations.
So here now comes Dwight Eisenhower with his prayer at the end of his farewell address for America and the world.
We pray that peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations may have their great human needs satisfied, that those now denied opportunity shall come to enjoy it to the full, that all who yearn for freedom may experience its spiritual blessings. Those who have freedom will understand also its heavy responsibility.
And now, are poverty, disease, and ignorance the result of bad people, of morally inferior people being lazy, Mr. Eisenhower, President Eisenhower?
That all who are insensitive to the needs of others will learn charity, and that the scourges of poverty, disease, and ignorance will be made disappear from the earth, and that in the goodness of time, all peoples will come to live together in a peace guaranteed by the binding force of mutual respect and love.
Respect and love. One of our self-described militant liberal presidents, Dwight D. Eisenhower, back when even the Republican Party had, when the Republican Party still had a few good folks in it. here in Boston, the Boston Globe, a fellow by the name of Jeff Jacoby had written in a letter complaining about left-wingers on campus. And so an MIT professor, James Orland, writes in, I confess I'm one of them. He talks about it, and he says, here is the following liberal beliefs that he promotes. Government policy should be based on the best available evidence, and evidence should be presented in an honest manner. Open and honest debate on issues is valuable and important, number one. Number two, the United States should honor its own laws and its international agreements, including the Geneva Conventions. Oh, there's a liberal idea for you. Number three, policies should be chosen to benefit the American people as a whole and not special interests. Definitely something the Bush administration would not like. Number four, the government should maintain regulations to protect our environment. Oh, my goodness. This guy is a hardcore liberal. 29 minutes past the hour.
Everyone's favorite thieves are back.
We need a high-paying job.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And they're doing a number on Europe.
We need to catch the Americans.
Mr. Ocean is the best.
George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Andy Garcia, Don Cheadle, Bernie Mac, and Julia Roberts.
That is making me a master thief.
Ocean's 12, a Steven Soderbergh film.
I'm freaking out.
Rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13 for language. Starts December 10th.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Arrests have been made in the murder of a Teamsters Union organizer in El Salvador, but the case hasn't been totally resolved yet. Salvadoran police arrested the mother-in-law of the organizer, Gilberto Soto, and several others suspected of being involved were also arrested. Police in El Salvador say the killing was from a family dispute. Soto's mother-in-law, Rosa Elba Ortiz, is accused of contracting Soto's killing. She denies it. Teamsters president James Hoffa and AFL-CIO president John Sweeney both suspect Soto was assassinated for trying to organize workers in El Salvador, a country that has a long and bloody history of hostility to labor unions.
While American workers worry about their jobs being outsourced to India, Indians worry about the type of jobs being created in their country. A delegation of Indian labor leaders are currently touring the United States and meeting with labor leaders in this country to discuss the future of job sharing. Ashim Roy, a representative of General Electric Workers in India, says the number of jobs multinational companies destroy in the U.S. is far greater than the jobs they create in India.
Manufacturing plants and production areas in India are getting linked up in a global supply chain. And so some of the earlier forms of unionization and building up contracts and looking at labor rights or labor standards along the supply chain. And that's the real issue that we're going to really discuss with unions and with organizations here. But more than that, we also would like to address some of the issues that the debate on outsourcing has brought out and want to kind of have engagements with unions which are involved with organizing the outsourcing workers here. And in general, have discussions with people who are having a viewpoint on outsourcing.
St. Louis teachers may be on strike for Christmas. A strike authorization vote is set for December 15th. The American Federation of Teachers says even though teacher strikes are illegal under Missouri law, it won't stop the teachers from walking off their jobs if that's what they vote to do. The AFT's Mary Armstrong says America was founded on civil disobedience, so the union won't be deterred from using it if that's what the members want. St. Louis teachers are making it clear, though, that their preference is to return to the bargaining table and work out a fair and acceptable contract. St. Louis teachers are not paid as well as suburban teachers, and that's one of the issues on the table.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Consumers are nervous about jobs, and therefore they aren't shopping. The Conference Board reported last week that consumer confidence dropped for the fourth consecutive month. Walmart was one of the hardest hit retailers, with only a 0.7 sales increase in stores that have been open for more than a year. Sears and JCPenney did the best in beating Wall Street predictions. Sears posted a whopping 2.8% gain in sales, while Wall Street was predicting a decline of 0.3% for the chain.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Don't worry about a thing.
everything will be all right. It's all going to work. Things go back and forth. You know, the pendulum swings back and forth, and eventually it comes back around, and things do work out. They really do. Where did my Berlusconi alert go? There it is, right there. Yes, indeed. It's this is the national anthem of Italy, for those of you who don't recognize it. It's time for Berlusconi alert. Yeah, Silvio Berlusconi. You remember that small-time crook who started a couple of businesses and bribed a few judges and a few other folks, you know, got involved with the mob and whatnot. And then he bought a radio station, and then he bought another radio station, and then he bought a TV station, he bought another TV station, he bought a newspaper, he bought another newspaper. And now he owns, and then he bought a radio network, and then he bought a TV network, and then he bought another radio network. And now he owns 90% of all the media in Italy, and once he owned all the media, he owns all of the television networks except for the one that's owned by the state, and he has put his good buddy and campaign manager in charge of that one. And once he got ownership of all the media in Italy, what did he do? He ran for elected office. Well, he actually created a political party to run, because in Italy they have a parliamentary system. And, you know, the parliament elects the prime minister, but nonetheless, the effect was the same. He got his party into office, they elected him, and now he's the prime minister of Italy. And so today, our story about Silvio Berlusconi, the cautionary tale for America, in my opinion. Italy's first criminal trial of a sitting prime minister drew toward a close on Friday. We'll see. It might even wrap up this week. We'll have another Berlusconi alert as time goes on, with defense lawyers making their final arguments aimed at trying to prevent Silvio Berlusconi from becoming the first convicted politician to hold the nation's most powerful office. Now, here's where it gets amazing. The defense strategy. The defense is not arguing that Berlusconi did not commit these crimes. No, they're not. Instead, they're arguing that the court should not convict him. Well, I can't even tell you. Let me just read it straight. And this is incredible. It kind of falls into the category of, well, let's not talk about the possibility of election fraud in the United States, because that might make the country look bad. Right? Kind of falls in the same category. The flamboyant Italian leader's lawyers summed up their case. This from Wire Service reports. Summed up their case by arguing that convicting Berlusconi of bribing judges in the 1980s would do lasting harm to the country's reputation. Yes, indeed. The verdict, defense lawyer Gattanio Perlacona said, quote, could change the history of this country and leave a mark on Italy's image, end quote. Last month, prosecutors urged the court to convict the prime minister and sentence him to 8 years in prison. But the defense says, it wouldn't look good, so don't do it. Berlusconi, a good buddy of George W. Bush, by the way, another conservative, another believer in the merging of state and corporate interests. Strong believer. Another believer that poverty, disease, and ignorance are simply moral failings and have nothing to do with government. Another believer that war is what you do, you know? It's not something you try to avoid, it's what you do. In fact, let's listen to another guy who had some liberal moments. He actually created the Environmental Protection Agency. Argued we have to protect the environment. We have to regulate the chemical industry, otherwise they will cause a national epidemic of cancer. As president, he said this. This is in 1960 when he was running for president.
Yes, as a matter of fact, the statement that Senator Kennedy made was that, to the effect that there were trigger-happy Republicans, that my stand on Kimoi and Matsu was an indication of trigger-happy Republicans.
This is Richard Nixon telling us that he is... and the Republican Party are the party of peace.
I resent that comment. I resent it because it's an implication that Republicans have been trigger-happy and therefore would lead this nation into war. I would remind Senator Kennedy of the past 50 years. I would ask him to name one Republican president who led this nation into war. There were three Democratic presidents who led us into war.
See, this is the Republicans for a long, long time were referring to those Democrat wars, you know, World War I, World War II, Korea.
I do not mean by that that one party is a war party and the other party is a peace party. But I do say that any statement to the effect that the Republican Party is trigger happy is belied by the record.
In 1960, I think Richard Nixon could actually say that accurately. He could say it truthfully. In fact, Dwight Eisenhower's campaign television commercials showed a cartoon of an elephant walking across, you know, the left or right on the TV screen, walking across the stage, beating a drum, which said Ike on it, and the music was "Vote for Peace, Vote for Eisenhower, Vote for Peace, Vote for Eisenhower." I'm not going to try and sing it for you, but that's what it was. Eisenhower was the peace candidate. He was going to end the war in Korea that Democrat Harry Truman had gotten us into. And then, of course, Reagan came along. And, you know, in California politics, Reagan got involved. And the first radcon, I'd say. Let's stop calling these people conservatives, because every time I call them conservatives, Barry Goldwater flinches in his grave. They're radical conservatives, like the neocons, you know, the new conservatives. These are the radcons. Reagan was the first of the radcons to reach high office. And you know, for example, his famous comment that...
Yet any time you and I question the schemes of the do-gooders, we're denounced as being against their humanitarian goal. They say we're always against things, we're never for anything. Well, the trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
Yeah,
now...
That was a nice applause line, you know. But it didn't say anything. But, of course, that's the kind of stuff that got Reagan elected. So Jack Kennedy had a response for that. He thought...
did read that Mr. Reston's column in the Times where Mr. Fulton Lewis had said that no one could get to the right of Barry Goldwater, but now I'm not so sure.
Another kind of cheap shot applause line. It's interesting stuff here.
We're not a warlike people.
Now, this, by the way, Franklin Roosevelt, again, here, this, look at how the world has changed its opinion of America. This is just a little clip here from Roosevelt about this.
We're not a warlike people. We've never sought glory as a nation of warriors. We're not interested in aggression. We are not interested, as the dictators are, in looting. We do not covet one square inch of the territory of any other nation.
And now we have this Pentagon report coming out saying, hang it up, guys. We have lost the battle for hearts and minds. We're building these bases in Iraq. We're pumping their oil. We're bringing it to the United States. And they're saying, you guys are imperialist colonial occupiers, whether we are or not, whether it's true or not. They have come to that conclusion, and there's no turning back. And I think that this is... I'm going to get into that more in more detail as the program goes on. But a great example of it is what happened in Saudi Arabia this morning, where, you know, they attacked the American embassy in Saudi Arabia. And the story is still developing. But we have, by invading Iraq without the agreement of the international community, the United Nations Resolution 1440 said clearly that nobody could invade Iraq until the United Nations voted that there was clear and present danger evidenced by that country. That it was just, you know, that it was obvious to everybody that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and represented a threat to people around it. And Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei were in the process of checking this stuff out. And George Bush says, we're not going to wait. We are not going to wait. And the whole world now is looking at us going, they are a warlike people. What has happened to the reputation of the United States? Can it ever be salvaged? You know, there's another dimension, I think, of this very, very odd worldview that, you know, it's just a fine thing to have massive poverty in the United States. That's not an issue government should be dealing with. Nothing can be done about that, except to give more tax breaks to the Walton family. And if somebody's running some other country and we don't like the way they're doing it, we'll take them out. This, of course, George Bush's new rationale. He started out with a rationale that there were weapons of mass destruction. You remember all those speeches. And now they've officially changed their story. And the American media is just like, okay, cool. Yeah, they've officially changed their story. Remarkable. 1-866-889. Where are our statesmen when we need them? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into the chat room. Alan, a truck driver in Arkansas, on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program. Alan, you're live. You need to listen to the telephone instead of the radio. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll come back to you, Alan. 1-866-2. There we go. 1-866-889-8894. Let's try Alan again. Alan, you listening? Are you there?
Hey, is this on? Am I on?
You are. You are live.
Hi. How are you doing? I've spoken to you once before, but I so much rather enjoy listening to you. But this morning, I wanted to make a comment. You know, we're talking about the war in Iraq. I heard somewhere, and I'm not sure who this is ascribed to, but in reference to justice, they say that justice must not only be fair, but must be seen as being fair.
Yeah.
And that relates to the war in Iraq, that war must not only be just, but should be seen as just.
Absolutely.
Particularly to the people we claim we want to liberate.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Alan. And this is the key to the whole thing, is that we can't have this arrogant policy of running around the world saying, okay, we're going to kick over this beehive or that beehive, we're going to take out this guy or that guy, not because it might not be the right thing to do. I mean, I think personally, frankly, if we took Robert Mugabe out of Zimbabwe and could figure out some way to replace him, we'd save the lives of probably about 2 million people.
Yes, we would.
But it has to be done in a way that where there is agreement in the international community. The United Nations signs off on it, because we have all signed this treaty. 191 nations now have signed this treaty saying that if we're going to have a war, the UN has to approve it. And there is a global test. And it's the right thing, because of the exact point that you made. It causes people to say, yes, that is a just war. I will support that. Now, instead, because we've had this, what is perceived as an unjust war by so much of the world, 90% of the Muslim world has turned against us.
Right.
And we're losing.
Unfortunately, these guys did not take that into consideration, because they just assume that once we're there, everything's going to fall into place.
Yeah, and it didn't work out that way.
They're not convinced of that.
Yeah, no, they're not. They're definitely not. Alan, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Billy is at Santa Rosa.
Where is it?
Where
Santa
is it?
Cruz.
Santa Cruz. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rama Schneider is in today, engineering the show, and he must have dyslexia. I don't know. It's Santa Rosa.
But he's got a great voice for radio.
Well, he does radio. He fills in for me when I'm not here. Rama did radio here in Vermont for years and years. He's an old radio guy.
When are you going to let me fill in?
Say that again?
I said, when are you going to let me fill in for you?
we'll have that discussion some other time, Billy. What's up?
You'll be thrown off the air, believe me.
Yeah,
you don't want to do that. First of all, I want to tell you something funny, and that is Rush Limbaugh obviously is listening closely to you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's talking about reframing today.
Oh, geez. So he's taking...
about the guy from Berkeley, Lachman or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, Lakoff, George Lakoff.
And as he said it, Lakoff rhymes with Hermine.
Only it's not Lakoff, it's Lakoff. But
yeah, of course, but for, you know, Rush's purposes, to twist is, you know, to tell the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, he's doing that today, so it's sort of funny. Here's the question I have for you, and the statement I want to make. It seems to me that the guy ran a horrible campaign. I don't want Curry to rerun again, and I have a question for you. Is it true he had millions he didn't spend?
Yeah, yeah.
You want to explain that to me?
No, I can't. I'm sorry. I'm no longer. I'm not trashing John Kerry, but I'm not defending him any longer.
Well, I'm not defending him any longer either. And in fact, I'm sending the message. Don't run again. You are confused if you think you got close. You didn't get close. My vote wasn't for you. You never made the sale. My vote was against Bush.
Yeah, and I think that probably you represent solidly 20 or 30% of Democrats and maybe as much as 60 or 70%. I really don't know where it falls.
Exactly.
And, but you represent a significant enough majority that if John Kerry were to run again for president, there's no way. There's no way.
This thing about keeping the money and thinking he can run again, my God.
Well, you know,
actually, you guys are just massively confused about this.
Could be. I mean, one of the stories is that he kept the money because they expected that they would have to spend it on lawyers because they figured the election was going to be close and we were going to have, you know, 6 months or 3 months of litigation like Gore did.
Well, and more bad decision. I mean, Jesus Christ, that's the wrong way to approach it.
And
spend every dime and you actually try to win the election and worry about the lawyers later.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, it would have worked, but it didn't work, so anyhow. Dave, let's see, Walter in Riverside, California is on the line. Hey, Walter, welcome to the show.
Hey, hi, John.
Hey, we've only got about 20, 30 seconds here left, by the way, Walter.
All right, everybody's got a question there. I got one.
Sure.
What happened to the money in those containers? Wasn't that Iraq's money?
The money?
Are they going to rebuild Iraq with their own money?
But that's what Paul Wolfowitz told us, that we were going to take all that money from the Iraqi oil and rebuild Iraq with it, right.
Yeah, but this Iraqi's money, they should have had that. Our government should be rebuilding Iraq, but damaging it, no?
Yeah, well, that's the theory. That's the theory, Walter. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An international group of scientists say amphibians around the world are in serious trouble. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People have been talking for years about problems that are hitting frogs and other types of amphibians. A group of 500 scientists recently issued a report on the status of these animals after reviewing research from all corners of the globe. They say the outlook is grim. There are more than 5,700 different species of amphibians, and more than 1,800 of them are headed toward extinction. Simon Stewart directed the project, and he says the results were worse than he ever imagined.
When we started this process to do the global amphibian assessment 3.5 years ago, we never dreamt that the situation would be this bad. Not only is it bad with nearly a third of the species at risk of extinction in the world, but also there are a number of species that are deteriorating very rapidly. 435 species that are in very rapid decline around the world. So, yeah, it's unfortunately a very grim picture.
Stewart is a biologist who works for the International Union for Conservation of Nature. He says amphibians are particularly sensitive creatures. They have permeable skin, so they quickly suffer from exposure to chemicals in their surroundings. And Stewart says many species are adapted to small geographic areas. They can't just pick up and move if their habitat is destroyed or if the climate starts to change. The scientific report is called the Global Amphibian Assessment. A news release about it was issued in October, and Stewart says it drew a lot of attention. He says that's one small piece of good news.
The worldwide coverage of this story has just blown our minds, and the desire that people have to learn more about it suggests that more people care than we might think.
Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I've been meek and hard like an oak. I've seen pretty people disappear like smoke. Friends will arrive, friends will disappear.
And welcome back. And I should add to Billy's comments, Rama does a radio show every Sunday night. You can hear it on the internet at GRR Radio, GRRradio.com. There's three R's in there all together. GRR, and then radio.com. 1-866-889-8894. When Franklin Roosevelt said,
I see one third of a nation ill housed, ill clad, ill nourished.
Was it that one third of Americans back then were morally inferior, and now it's only one fifth or one quarter or whatever? Has that changed, or does government play some role in all of this?
Yeah.
Dave in Columbus, Ohio, is on the line. Hey, Dave. Dave.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
How are you doing today?
Good. What's up?
Hey, I was listening to you talk about how. You know, the United Nations had to approve any new war action, that type of thing. And I just wanted to get your opinion on how the oil for food scandal that's now emerging contributed to the UN not approving what they basically had voted for in the earlier action.
There's absolutely no relationship at all, Dave, because the UN doesn't approve anything. The UN member nations approve things. And if Kofi Annan or his son or any of those guys who are bureaucrats at the UN were up to their necks in corruption, they should be nailed and sent off to jail. Right?
Okay, so
I think we agree on that. But
how do you account for the actions of the French, the Russians, and several other member nations who are also being implicated?
They did not want to get into a war where their people were going to die and they were going to spend billions of dollars when there was no threat. You know, the oil for food program was generating less money than we're giving Halliburton right now, Dave.
There, I don't think so.
Yeah, look at the numbers. The
amount of revenue it generated in kickbacks for Saddam Hussein alone is over $20 billion.
Right.
Now, if you're saying we're giving Halliburton $20 billion straight out under the table, I'm interested in finding out about that, too.
Well, we've spent $200 billion, and we know that more than half of that money, more than half of that $200 billion is going to private corporations. How much of it do you think Halliburton's getting?
I'm sorry, did you say $200 million?
Billion.
billion.
We have spent $200 billion, or we've allocated through the end of this fiscal year, $200 billion for Iraq. And I don't think any of those countries would look at 10 or 20 or even $5 billion in revenue and say, you know, we want to keep this oil revenue going, so we're going to vote against it. Come on, Dave, don't, you know, it's nonsense. It's just absolute nonsense. The very clear reality is that the countries who did not vote to go to war, which was every country in the world except us and England, voted not to go to war because there was no evidence. And they were, and Hans Blix was clear about it. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Arrests have been made in the murder of a Teamsters Union organizer in El Salvador, but the case hasn't been totally resolved yet. Salvadoran police arrested the mother-in-law of the organizer, Gilberto Soto, and several others suspected of being involved were also arrested. Police in El Salvador say the killing was from a family dispute. Soto's mother-in-law, Rosa Elba Ortiz, is accused of contracting Soto's killing. She denies it. Teamsters president James Hoffa and AFL-CIO president John Sweeney both suspect Soto was assassinated for trying to organize workers in El Salvador, a country that has a long and bloody history of hostility to labor unions.
While American workers worry about their jobs being outsourced to India, Indians worry about the type of jobs being created in their country. A delegation of Indian labor leaders are currently touring the United States and meeting with labor leaders in this country to discuss the future of job sharing. Ashim Roy, a representative of General Electric Workers in India, says the number of jobs multinational companies destroy in the U.S. is far greater than the jobs they create in India.
Manufacturing plants and production areas in India are getting linked up in a global supply chain. And so some of the earlier forms of unionization and building up contracts and looking at labor rights or labor standards along the supply chain. And that's the real issue that we're going to really discuss with unions and with organizations here. But more than that, we also would like to address some of the issues that the debate on outsourcing has brought out and want to kind of have engagements with the unions which are involved with organizing the outsourcing workers here and in general have, you know, discussions with people who are having a viewpoint on outsourcing.
St. Louis teachers may be on strike for Christmas. A strike authorization vote is set for December 15th. The American Federation of Teachers says even though teacher strikes are illegal under Missouri law, it won't stop the teachers from walking off their jobs if that's what they vote to do. The AFT's Mary Armstrong says America was founded on civil disobedience, so the union won't be deterred from using it if that's what the members want. St. Louis teachers are making it clear, though, that their preference is to return to the bargaining table and work out a fair and acceptable contract. St. Louis teachers are not paid as well as suburban teachers, and that's one of the issues on the table.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Consumers are nervous about jobs, and therefore they aren't shopping. The Conference Board reported last week that consumer confidence dropped for the fourth consecutive month. Walmart was one of the hardest hit retailers, with only a 0.7 sales increase in stores that have been open for more than a year. Sears and JCPenney did the best in beating Wall Street predictions. Sears posted a whopping 2.8% gain in sales, while Wall Street was predicting a decline of 0.3% for the chain.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Spam is uniquely American. This mysterious meat-like concoction in a pull-tab can is a made-in-the-USA icon of American marketing, produced by Hormel Foods in Minnesota. I happen to love Spam, and no, I don't want to know what's in it. I subsisted on fried Spam sandwiches to get me through college, and I've even been a tasting judge of the sometimes startling Spam concoctions prepared for the renowned Spamorama contest held in my town of Austin, Texas for the past 26 years. But I was stunned, and not a little hurt, to learn that the corporate purveyors of Spam are now trying to hide the Americanism of this potted meat delicacy. It seems that Hormel is concerned that its Spam sales could be hurt in England because of the Brits' rather intense opposition to George W.'s war in Iraq. Indeed, a poll finds that 20% of consumers in Britain, Japan, and elsewhere say they'll shun such identifiably American products as Spam, Marlboro, and Starbucks to protest Bush's my way or the highway approach to the rest of the world. To counter this possibility, Hormel has launched a $3.7 million marketing blitz in England in an effort to position Spam as quintessentially British. The ads, featuring typical Brits, portray Spam as a longtime part of the British culture, as though it's a homegrown product with no connection to that place across the pond. Hormel has even anglicized the Spamorama Festival. The Spam Chippy of the Year Award is presented to the British fish and chip shop that makes the best dish from this pink meat stuff. They also named the Spam Chef of the Year in England, a culinary honor that was recently won by a chap who makes Spam wontons. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Hormel, stop hiding your beautiful pink piece of Americana under a British bushel. You should strut your stuff as one of the good things from America. Instead of Bush's gunboat diplomacy, show the world Spam diplomacy.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works. Fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works. Not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder. Spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must remain strong, for I bring good news.
Oh, you bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Let me get this straight. I'm trying to understand the con logic here. This must be why they're called cons. Russia, for example, believes that Saddam Hussein has nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons, and he may attack them. He represents a threat. He could cause World War III. He's in bed with the terrorists that they're fighting in Chechnya. But they're skimming a few billion bucks a year off the oil for food program, so they say, it doesn't matter if the guy is a threat. And Germany does the same thing. And France and Syria, who's, the next country over. And Saudi Arabia. In Egypt, you recall President Mubarak of Egypt said, if you invade Iraq, you will create 100 bin Ladens. All of these countries said, You know, we will vote for Resolution 1440, which says, let's go in and find out if this guy is a threat. And if we determine that he's a threat, we can attack him. But if we don't determine he's a threat, nobody can attack him. And they all said, yeah, let's vote for this. Let's have this investigation. Let's check this thing out. And then as the evidence was coming in from Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei that there was probably no threat there at all, and with another month or so, they could pretty much with absolute certainty say there was no threat. That's the reality. I guess I've got to switch to the conservative alternate reality. Hans Blix is not finding any threat. Mohammed al-Baradei is not finding any threat. But there is a real threat there. A real and present danger. Saddam Hussein has a balsa wood airplane. He actually did have one. It could fly maybe a mile and a half. But George Bush in his State of the Union address says in Cleveland. He says he's got unmanned aerial vehicles capable of dispersing chemical and biological weapons to the United States. Right? Well, if they can get to here, they can get to anywhere in Europe. But all these countries decided, you know, we'd rather skim a few bucks from the oil from food program than have our people be safe. So they instructed their ambassadors to the United Nations not to vote in favor of attacking Saddam.
Yeah.
That just makes perfect sense, doesn't it? The extent to which these guys have to twist reality, and the extent and the number of Americans who swallow it unthinkingly never ceases to amaze me. I mean, let's just look at this with a little common sense. Just a little common sense. Welcome back to the program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. Broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, archives at whiterosesociety.org. We have a Borowitz alert in just a moment. First, let's take a call from Mike in Wisconsin. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. How are you doing today?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Mike?
Oh, I just wanted to say I've been listening to your show since mid-August when I first turned on to you, and I love you and thank you for what you're doing out there.
Thank you.
My question is, how does a young, gun-toting, meat-eating progressive with a blue-collar worker, former firefighter and EMT, I had to give that up and go back to truck driving, and I'm still a blue-collar worker. How does somebody without a lot of money try to get active in politics and be able to try and run for an office without having a big financial backing?
That's a great question, Mike. You know, I went to the Democracy for America. It used to be Dean for America, and now they've reinvented it as Democracy for America and kind of gotten Howard Dean out of it. I mean, he's still involved, but it's not about him anymore. Meetup here in Vermont last Wednesday. And the first Wednesday of every month, all around the United States, they're having these meetups, and you can find them by going to democracyforamerica.com. And the main focus of this meeting was, okay, here in Chittenden County, or you know whatever county it was, what offices are coming up in the next election? I mean, almost every year there's an election somewhere, right?
Right.
They had identified two school board seats, the office of dog catcher. Two school board seats, dog catcher, auditor of accounts. I mean, there was like a half a dozen seats that people could run for, and they were saying, you know, who among us wants to run for these seats, and then we'll help raise the money, we'll help make that happen. And this is what the Republicans did after Barry Goldwater went down in flames. It's what they did starting in the late 60s, early 70s, and they built a grassroots movement. And eventually infiltrated and took over the Democratic Party, and so there's now people trying to do it for the Republican Party, and there's now people trying to do it with the Democratic Party, and I see the Democracy for America folks as right at the front of that. So what I would suggest is that in your local community, wherever your home base is, try and be there on the first Wednesday of a month. Go to the Democracy for America website, check that out, and show up for one of these meetups. and find out. I mean, that's kind of step one. Another one would be to contact your local Democratic Party or your local Green Party, or, you know, whatever it may be called. Here in Vermont, it's called the Progressive Party, and ask them, hey, are there offices? You know, let's start at the beginning. Is there a school board office, for example? Are there local offices that they're looking for a good candidate that I can run for? Because that, you know where Michael Dukakis started in politics? The school board. School board. In a small town in Massachusetts, he ran for school board. That's how he got started in politics.
Okay, my biggest thing, I don't have a college degree. I'm just a hard worker. I took a lot of political science in high school. I lived in Iowa at the time in high school. I got to participate in what was called a student house model session, where students from each high school district in the state got to make and pass laws for 3 days at the Capitol in Des Moines. And to be a part of this, you had to come up with a viable bill to be accepted for the program, and that's what I did. I was accepted, and I had a lot of fun, and I learned a lot about how the political system works.
Yeah,
like I said, I don't have a big college degree, and I don't have a lot of money behind me. I'm just working paycheck to paycheck, which is smaller every week, and I just want to do something. Out by us is the Democrat Farm Labor Party here in Wisconsin, by the way.
Yeah, good. Well, Mike, you're exactly the kind of person that we need in politics, and I honor you. I tip my hat. I salute you for my metaphorical hat. I salute you for your willingness to do it, and would say, begin at the beginning. And I think that's where the beginning is, and I think these DFA folks and others are absolutely right in it. Louise and I went to a dinner party / beer bash down in Boston this weekend, and met with some really interesting folks. William Rivers Pitt from TruthOut.org was there and whatnot, and most of the conversation was about how the Democratic Party has tanked. It's all about elitism and money and getting corporations in and all this stuff, and it's going away, and we've got to bring it back to its roots or replace it with something that is grounded in just the core values, the historic liberal core values that were so articulated so well by Franklin Roosevelt and even Dwight Eisenhower. Do that. So, Mike, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Yep. Appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
I shall, and you too. And keep spreading the good word. It's important. It's important that there be people out there willing to do that. And I'm so pleased that you are. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Brian in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. I just want to say it was great meeting you back in Grand Rapids here a few months back.
Well, thanks. We're hopeful we can do that again. I want to start actually getting on the road more often and to more of our affiliates and doing.
We would appreciate it. My question for you was, I'm a college student, and I was in a conversation today with one of my conservative classmates who I consider to be a friend, and we were on the topic of Bush's tax cuts. And he gave me the whole, Republican mantra about how, tax cuts are good for the economy because it gives people more money to have in their pockets. And so many people, I don't know what the number is now, but don't actually have to pay taxes anymore. And my response to him was, the fact of so many jobs being lost and health care rising and the cost of health care. And my question for you is, how best can I articulate myself about, confronting questions like this?
Sure. Well, here's the problem. He said apples, and you responded with oranges. First of all, there is a grain of truth to the idea that if you inject money into an economy, you're going to stimulate the economy. And one way to inject money into the economy is to take less out of it. That is to take fewer taxes. The problem with the Republican tax cuts is twofold. Number one, all evidence shows, and you go back and you look at the history of this, and this is like Jack Kennedy's tax cut, all evidence shows that if you want to stimulate an economy quickly, short term, you give the tax cuts to the people at the bottom of the economic stack, not at the top.
Okay.
The people at the top are going to save that money. They're going to invest that money, but that doesn't mean that they're going to build a factory. People build factories because there's demand for products. They don't build factories because somebody gave them a tax cut. And the reason that there's demand for products is because the vast majority of people want to buy those products, and the vast majority of people don't have the money, They're not going to buy the product, so nobody's going to build the factory. They're just going to invest that money in T-bills or something. So, number one, if you want to do short-term stimulus, you do tax cuts that are targeted exclusively at people who are making, say, under $100,000 or under $80,000, which is the exact opposite of what Bush did, number one. Number two, this what Bush did wasn't really a tax cut. It was a tax postponement. Those taxes are still going to have to be paid. Bush did not cut government spending at all. In fact, he increased it dramatically. And he reduced tax revenues. So what happened? We have to borrow money. Who are we borrowing the money from? Mostly the Chinese, the Japanese, the Saudis, and Europeans. And also from ourselves, a good chunk of it from people within the United States buying treasuries. But we're borrowing that money. We're borrowing it in the name of our children and grandchildren. Most of it is on 20-year debt instruments. So 20 years from now, that bill is going to come due. And when that bill comes due, it's going to be a very, very, very difficult one to pay off. Because we've gone from, we were under $1 trillion in debt when Reagan came into office, and Reagan said, oh, let's borrow money and give that borrowed money to the wealthy folks and, you know, make things look good. And it got him reelected, you know, in 84. But Reagan left office with a couple of $1 trillion in debt. We'd never had a trillion before Reagan came in. Now we're up to $8 trillion in debt. And this, so number one, Bush did it wrong. It should only be done very short term. It should be done the low end. And number two, it wasn't a tax cut anyway. And number three, not only was it not a tax cut because you know the money is still being spent and we borrowed it from our grandchildren, but also we are having to pay those taxes because where they are cutting back now, this probably has more to do with the war in Iraq than anything else, but nonetheless, where they are cutting back is in services that and funds that are going to the states. So now states are increasing their taxes. And, you know, the net result is that people are still paying taxes. And whenever they say poor people are not paying taxes, they're lying. Poor people may not be paying income taxes. They're paying FICA, they're paying sales tax, all kinds of things. So that's the bottom line. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Everyone's favorite thieves are back.
We need a high-paying job.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And they're doing a number on Europe.
We need to catch the Americans.
Mr. Ocean.
Who's the best?
George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Andy Garcia, Don Cheadle, Bernie Mac, and Julia Roberts.
That is making me a master thief.
Ocean's 12, a Steven Soderbergh film.
I'm freaking out.
Rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13 for language. Now playing.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live? And who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, William with John Hopkins University on the line. Hey, William.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Great. What's up?
I just happened to tune in to your show today, and you briefly address the Oil for Food program, and just as to preface my comments, I'll just say that you won a Project Censor 2004 award, right?
I did, yeah.
Okay, I won one as well. I'm the author of Article Number 19, which was U.S. dollar versus the euro, another reason for the invasion of Iraq. I don't know if you're familiar with
yeah.
My essay.
Okay, yeah, I am.
Anyway, I just I wrote a book on this, which is coming out next year, and I'll probably have ask you to review it. But what I wanted to mention is that the Oil for Food program, the current issues is sort of a red herring. The real scandal here is what happened to the money that was in that program and what currency it was in. And I'm going to read you just one quick quote, and this is very censored in the United States. And this is from September 14th of 2000, and this is from the Iraqi News Service. The Iraqi cabinet has decided to assign a committee of economists with the task of seriously studying the possibility of using the euro or any other currency instead of the dollar.
Right, to denominate oil.
Transactions of our foreign contracts.
Yeah.
The U.S. dollar is one of the levers of our enemy's influence and power on both international and regional levels, end quote.
Yeah.
So what they did after that, a couple of weeks later, Saddam, 10 days later, in fact, came out and said, no more. You can buy all the oil you want. You just have to pay me in euros. So right. That's what he did right before the election. And for 2.5 years, we were buying all 64% of Iraq's oil. Not in dollars, but in euros, and the corporate, the military-industrial petroleum conglomerate didn't like that idea. And the Bush administration, we went into Iraq, we overthrew them. And the very first thing that Bush did was UN Resolution 1483, which was proposed.
Right. Redenominate oil in dollars.
What's that?
Redenominate the oil in dollars.
Exactly. That was the very first order of business.
Yep. Yeah. And we seized the oil ministry. Good point, William. Thank you for the call, and thanks for bringing that point up. It's an important one. I appreciate it. And when your book is together, let me know. I love to write blurbs for people's books. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service is with us, our daily report from Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria, lots going on there, eh?
There certainly is, and they've only got 2 days to get it all done because then they all go home.
Yes.
So, and there's some kind of a Christmas ball at the White House tonight, so you can cut out a few hours from tonight as well.
Yeah.
Some kind of congressional thing they're all going to. So you've got getting ready time, getting their time, and being their time, and then getting over the hangover time. So
is intelligence reform going to get passed?
Huh?
Is intelligence reform going to get passed?
You know, my view is it's probably, I think it's too early in the day to say.
Yeah.
Even though we're halfway through the day, I think it's starting to, even though I don't think the president really supports this, I think it's starting to look to him as somebody who said, I've got capital and I intend to spend it. It's received so much publicity in the news, which I think probably they did not expect,
right,
that it's starting to look bad. He is starting to look like he's lost his own party. And I suspect that the rather tepid pressure that's been put to bear will now be increased. Now, whether that's enough, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think it will be increased, because now we've got Senator Warner, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, chiming in and saying he has problems with it, because he's backing Donald Rumsfeld. So, you know, the president hasn't just got the House to deal with now. Now he's got some in the Senate.
Well,
it's very, very difficult, this one.
Yeah, Warner's in charge of armed services, and the guy in the House is in charge of armed services. Those are the committees that are going to lose a lot of money and clout and power and influence.
Exactly.
If the budget moves off the Pentagon and into some central source. Also, will Porter Goss end up with the whole budget if this thing goes through, or is he going to have to? Is Bush going to have to create some brand new office?
Well, that's one of the questions. It's not entirely clear. I think the 9/11 Commission wouldn't have minded there being a new office created. They certainly had some concerns about the way that the CIA was doing things, and I think that they would be very concerned about the politicization so far under Porter Goss. But as it stands at the moment, the director of the CIA would have control over his budget in a way that he currently does not.
Remarkable. So it's going to be an interesting day. We'll catch up with you tomorrow, Victoria, on how it shook out.
Yes, indeed.
And how everything's going. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. It's 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, exposing the con in conservative. We'll be right back.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Arrests have been made in the murder of a Teamsters Union organizer in El Salvador, but the case hasn't been totally resolved yet. Salvadoran police arrested the mother-in-law of the organizer, Gilberto Soto, and several others suspected of being involved were also arrested. Police in El Salvador say the killing was from a family dispute. Soto's mother-in-law, Rosa Elba Ortiz, is accused of contracting Soto's killing. She denies it. Teamsters president James Hoffa and AFL-CIO president John Sweeney both suspect Soto was assassinated for trying to organize workers in El Salvador, a country that has a long and bloody history of hostility to labor unions.
While American workers worry about their jobs being outsourced to India, Indians worry about the type of jobs being created in their country. A delegation of Indian labor leaders are currently touring the United States and meeting with labor leaders in this country to discuss the future of job sharing. Ashim Roy, a representative of General Electric Workers in India, says the number of jobs multinational companies destroy in the U.S. is far greater than the jobs they create in India.
Manufacturing plants and production areas in India are getting linked up in a global supply chain. And so some of the earlier forms of unionization and building up contracts and looking at labor rights or labor standards along the supply chain. And that's a real issue that we're going to really discuss with unions and with organizations here. But more than that, we also would like to address some of the issues that the debate on outsourcing has brought out and want to kind of have engagements with unions which are involved with organizing the outsourcing workers here. And in general, have discussions with people who are having a viewpoint on outsourcing.
St. Louis teachers may be on strike for Christmas. A strike authorization vote is set for December 15th. The American Federation of Teachers says even though teacher strikes are illegal under Missouri law, it won't stop the teachers from walking off their jobs if that's what they vote to do. The AFT's Mary Armstrong says America was founded on civil disobedience, so the union won't be deterred from using it if that's what the members want. St. Louis teachers are making it clear, though, that their preference is to return to the bargaining table and work out a fair and acceptable contract. St. Louis teachers are not paid as well as suburban teachers, and that's one of the issues on the table.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Consumers are nervous about jobs, and therefore they aren't shopping. The Conference Board reported last week that consumer confidence dropped for the fourth consecutive month. Walmart was one of the hardest hit retailers, with only a 0.7 sales increase in stores that have been open for more than a year. Sears and JCPenney did the best in beating Wall Street predictions. Sears posted a whopping 2.8% gain in sales, while Wall Street was predicting a decline of 0.3% for the chain.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
In the good old USA, I'm proud to say, we got brand new action, good old fashioned too.
And welcome back. And the future. I've been promising you this report from Andy Borowitz. Here it be. Families ask ex-cabinet members to spend less time with them. Irate wives and children march on Washington, the headline. Just days after several prominent members of the Bush cabinet resigned their positions to spend more time with their families, have demanded that the former officials spend less time with them. At a press conference in Washington today, a group representing former cabinet members' families, headed up by Mrs. John Ashcroft and Mrs. Tom Ridge, told reporters that the outgoing officials' decision to spend more time with their families has been an unmitigated disaster. Mrs. Ashcroft said, "When they said they wanted to spend more time with their families, they really should have asked their families first. Speaking for myself and the kids, this is the last thing any of us wanted." End quote. Mrs. Ridge echoed Mrs. Ashcroft's words, saying that the former Homeland Security Secretary has, quote, wreaked total havoc on the Ridge household in the few days he had been home, wrapping the house in plastic sheeting and duct tape, making it impossible for the Ridge children to go to school. The irate wives and children of ex-cabinet members marched in Washington today demanding that the government provide the former officials with job retraining or, at the very least, hobbies. Meanwhile, Mrs. Ridge is casting an envious eye at the wife of Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, who appears to be holding his job for another 4 years. Mrs. Ridge said, "I hope she realizes how lucky she is to have a husband who's screwing up the rest of the world instead of screwing up her kitchen." Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alice in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Alice, I guess KGOG got their transmitter back working again. Yes, no, maybe?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Alice.
Tom, do you still have any question in your mind that our election was rigged?
Well, it depends on how you define rigged, but no, there's no question in my mind, Alice. But
even
by the most broad definitions, it's...
I'm very glad.
Yeah, it's quite apparent to me that, the old-fashioned tricks that both parties have done for years and years, the Democrats were famous for it in the South in the 40s and 50s, of, very few machines or, making it difficult for people back when
why did they insist on these machines with no records and no recounts?
Well, that's a really good question, Allison. And it's one that has a lot of people scratching their heads. Why would Diebold say that they wouldn't imagine making a teller machine, an ATM machine, without a receipt? They wouldn't imagine creating a Ticketron machine without a receipt. But because those are really important things. But a voting machine, it doesn't need a receipt. Why would anybody say that? And why would any member of Congress? Why did the Republican majority in Congress in 2002 push so hard to push through this Help America Vote Act that gave $3.8 billion to the states to buy these kinds of machines? Why? Nobody I know has a good answer, and it stinks.
Well, I appreciate you taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling.
Keep up the good work.
I'll do my very best, and you too.
Okay.
Keep spreading the good word.
Right behind you.
Okay, thank you,
okay.
Alice. I do appreciate it, and you keep sharing the good word too. It's good to know there's good people listening to the program and spreading the word. This, from the Sunday Herald, the Sunday Herald is the largest, the Sydney, Australia paper. It's the largest newspaper in Australia. The Sunday edition is called the Sunday Herald. And why it is that this story is being broken in Australia, not in the United States, has me baffled. I have not seen, you know, I've seen actually little pieces of this here in the United States. It's not like, you know, they've uncovered something that's a secret. But it's a major story in Australia, and it's not being covered here. And here, this is by Neil McKay, the investigations editor of the Sunday Herald, yesterday's paper. The Pentagon has admitted that the war on terror and the invasion and occupation of Iraq have increased support for al-Qaeda, made ordinary Muslims hate the U.S., and caused a global backlash against America because of the, quote, self-serving hypocrisy, end quote, of George W. Bush's administration over the Middle East. The mea culpa, writes Neil McKay, is contained in a shockingly frank, quote, strategic communications, end quote, report written this autumn by the Defense Science Board for Pentagon Supremo Donald Rumsfeld. On, quote, the war of ideas for the struggle or the struggle for hearts and minds, end quote, the report says, quote, American efforts have not only failed, they may also have achieved the opposite of what they intended. American direct intervention in the Muslim world, I'm quoting now from this Pentagon report, American direct intervention in the Muslim world has paradoxically elevated the stature of and support for radical Islamists while diminishing support for the United States to single digits in some Arab societies. End of quote. And, it, you know, you just want to say, I told you so. I mean, the largest demonstrations in the history of the world, we were out there in the streets saying, if you do this, if you invade a country that does not represent a threat to us, or at least does not represent a demonstrated threat to us, if you invade them before you can show the world that there actually is a threat, you'll be doing what Hitler did with Poland, and you will be perceived the same way. And we went ahead and did it, and here we are. Referring to the repeated mantra from the White House that those who oppose the U.S. and the Middle East, quote, hate our freedoms, the report says, and again, now I am quoting from a Pentagon report prepared for Donald Rumsfeld personally. Quote, Muslims do not hate our freedoms, but rather they hate our policies. The overwhelming majority voice their objections to what they see as one-sided support in favor of Israel and against Palestinian rights, and the long-standing, even increasing support for what Muslims collectively see as tyrannies, most notably Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Pakistan, and the Gulf states. Thus, I'm still reading from the Pentagon report. Thus, when American public diplomacy talks about bringing democracy to Islamic societies, this is seen as nothing more than self-serving hypocrisy. Moreover, saying that freedom is the future of the Middle East, that in quotes within this quote, saying that freedom is the future of the Middle East is seen as patronizing in the eyes of Muslims. The American occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq has not led to democracy there, but only more chaos and suffering. U.S. actions appear, in contrast, to be motivated by ulterior motives and deliberately controlled in order to best serve American national interests at the expense of true Muslim self-determination. End of quote from the Pentagon, the Pentagon's own report. The report goes on to say, Neil McKay says that the report says the U.S. is now engaged in, quote, a global and generational struggle of ideas which it is rapidly losing. They point out that more than 90% of the population of some Muslim countries, such as Saudi Arabia, are opposed to U.S. policies, where they're showing up at our embassy this morning with guns. Again, quoting the report, the war has increased mistrust of America in Europe, weakened support for the war on terrorism, and undermined U.S. credibility worldwide. This, in turn, poses an increased threat to U.S. national security. George Bush not only has not made us safer, he has made us less safe, according to the Pentagon. America's image problem, the report's authors suggest, is, quote, linked to perceptions of the U.S. as arrogant, hypocritical, and self-indulgent. The White House has paid little attention to the problems. End quote. McKay points out that rather than supporting tyranny, most Muslims want to overthrow tyrannical regimes like Saudi Arabia. Quote, again from the Pentagon report, the U.S. finds itself in the strategically awkward and potentially dangerous situation of being the longstanding prop and alliance partner of these authoritarian regimes. Without the U.S., these regimes could not survive. There is no yearning to be liberated by the U.S. groundswell among Muslim societies. I'm still quoting from the Pentagon report. The perception of intimate U.S. support of tyrannies in the Muslim world is perhaps the critical vulnerability in American strategy. It strongly undercuts our message while strongly promoting that of the enemy. And the Muslim world is not unaware of the fact that the Bush family and their collective business associates have received more than $1 billion in the past 30 years from the bin Laden and a family in the Saudi royal family. They're not unaware of that fact. This is not a secret. It's not a secret in the United States either, but I mean, it's definitely not a secret in the Muslim world. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, and Kate in Arcata, California has called. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I had several things to share with you today, but I think I'll just stick to something that relates to what you're saying. About Iraq, and I heard a report on the radio, I think, sometime over the last few days. A woman lost her son in Iraq, and he had been wounded and then sent back again. And he went back because he wanted to, because he wanted to be with his buddies. And she said that they had a last conversation as he was leaving on the plane, I guess. And she said, "I'm your mother, and I feel like I'm supposed to be protecting you. Now I'm sending you back into the worst place, you know, in the world." And he said to her, "Mom, you've protected me all your life, but your job is over. Now it's time for me to protect you." And so he went, and he was killed.
Right.
And, you know, we've been kind of programmed by the media to look down on people who will sacrifice their children for, you know, a cause and be a suicide bomber. Well, but what's the difference between being a suicide bomber and being proud of your child for doing that and being proud of your child for going to protect your country or your family? The last thing that mother said was she was just in such grief, but she said, "But I have to say that in spite of what happened, the Marines was a great thing for my son." So this kind of convoluted thinking that exists on both sides.
Yeah. Well, here's the problem, Kate. There is this thing about dissonance. You know, there's a certain level of dissonance, internal intellectual dissonance that human beings just can't tolerate. They psychologically can't handle. And if you're in Iraq, or if your child is in Iraq, and it suddenly dawns on you that our being in Iraq not only is not protecting the United States, but is actually working against the interests of the United States because it's generating so much Muslim hatred of the United States all around the world, then all of a sudden there's this, it was all for nothing, yet I still have to do it. And a lot of people just are incapable of going there intellectually. And so, you know, you have some people who just literally are in denial, just like alcoholic families, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, that's just a very typical human, you know, welcome to the human race kind of reaction. And then there are also people who have been, you know, watching Fox News and listening to right-wing talk radio who actually believe, as a majority of people who voted for George Bush in the last election, according to the exit polls, believed, that Saddam Hussein had hired the people who flew the planes into the towers, and that those people were from Iraq, when in fact they were most of them were Saudis, and Saddam Hussein not only had nothing to do with it, but he was fighting a low-level war with bin Laden and the other all the Islamists. He was a secularist, but you know so you've got misinformed people, who you know, and maybe this kid was one of those, thinking that he was going off to defend his mother by fighting in Iraq.
Yes.
And then you have people who just, they have to believe it because it justifies their existence.
Right.
It's a tragedy in either case.
It is, and it seems to me that one of the things, I mean, I'm trying to look for ways to take action in the midst of all of this misinformation that we're getting from the media, et cetera. And it seems to me that one of the ways that would be productive, I'm not quite sure how to do it, but would be to copy that Pentagon report that you just said, or at least what you just read of it, and give it to people who may not be informed by anything but Fox News, and just ask them to read it. And in a small way, expose them to something that you know they're not going to read, which might actually help to change their mind down the road.
Yeah. You know, I'm of two minds about this, Kate. On the one hand, if I was talking to somebody whose child was in Iraq and they were saying, and my son is over there proudly serving to defend this country, I would not say a word.
Right. That's not, those aren't the people I'm talking about. I'm really talking about, I actually thought this before you said it too, that those would be people I wouldn't give it to.
Yeah.
But people who are just, you know, maybe people that you know voted for Bush and have said to you that that they believe the war is justified, et cetera.
Yeah.
Not someone who has a family member there. That would just be plain cruel, I think.
Yeah, and it probably wouldn't be productive. I mean, you know, there would not be a positive outcome from it. But people have to learn these things on their own, I think, frankly. But here's the issue in my mind. This is bigger than Iraq. As you know, if you listen to the first hour of the program, we had these clips from Dwight Eisenhower saying we're not a warlike people. I had clips from Richard Nixon in the 1960 campaign saying that the Democrats had started the three wars of the 20th century. The Republican Party was not the party of war. The Republican Party would never start a war unnecessarily. Mm. That Nixon was outraged that Jack Kennedy during the debates even implied that Nixon might be trigger happy. Mm. And he goes into this whole rant about it. And Nixon was right at that point in time. And the big issue here is that, you know, yeah, we've screwed up. You know, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution was a phony thing, but the majority of Americans had no idea it was a phony thing, and I don't think most of the military knew it was a phony thing, and there's an argument about who in the Johnson administration, for that matter, knew it was a phony thing. You know, to what extent that war was phonied up. But the reality is that until the Iraq War, we had never done what Hitler did with Poland. We had never overtly said, we're going to take out another country just because we decided to, you know, and
right.
Bush has now stopped saying we took them out because we thought they were a threat and has started saying we took them out because we wanted to. This is what he said in Canada a couple days ago.
I think the bigger issue is manifest destiny.
Well, there's that too. I mean,
that is important, I think.
Yeah, that's a whole other can of worms. But here's this big issue of, you know, do we have that right? I say no. 10 minutes before the end.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash, these salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Walmart is currently the defendant in the largest sex discrimination class action lawsuit against a private employer in U.S. history. Over 1.5 million women are eligible plaintiffs. And now the nation's largest retailer is asking a federal appeals court to reverse the ruling that made the suit, first filed by 6 women, into a class action. Kelly Ramirez reports from Oakland, California.
In its appeal to the federal Ninth Circuit, Walmart is arguing that a class action is inappropriate because its own studies show that there's no pay discrimination between men and women at 90% of its stores and no pattern of promotion decisions adverse to women. Brad Seligman of the Impact Fund in Berkeley, California, is lead attorney for the plaintiffs.
Well, this is the ballgame for both sides. If we lose the class certification, this case right now is just 6 individual women against the largest company in the history of the world. If, on the other hand, the class certification is upheld, Walmart faces a trial involving every one of its female employees since 1998. We are ready to go to trial, and that trial is going to be held in San Francisco, which, to quote Eddie Murphy, is Walmart's worst nightmare.
Seligman thinks legal rules favor maintenance of the class.
On appeal, which is what they're doing, there's a well-known rule that says the court is required to uphold what the trial judge did in this case unless he abused his discretion or made clearly erroneous factual findings. So it's a very deferential standard, which means that they have a heavy burden of convincing the Ninth Circuit that the judge, despite his painstaking 84-page opinion, was basically out to lunch.
Seligman anticipates a hearing on this appeal in the spring. No date for decision by the Ninth Circuit has been set. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Kelly Ramirez in Oakland, California.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It was in the early morning hours when I fell into a phone call.
So here's an amazing juxtaposition. On the one hand, we have Lakhdar Brahimi. You know who he is. He's the UN Special Envoy to Iraq. The guy who is there in Iraq representing the United Nations. The United Nations now has, what, 35 people? In Iraq, and in January, they are going to have to conduct an election. This, of course, has a lot of people raising their eyebrows, because if the UN is not willing to come in and conduct the election, and the election is instead conducted by the current Iraqi interim government or by the United States, it's extremely unlikely that it will be widely viewed as legitimate. I mean, this is just simple reality that, you know, if the UN isn't doing it, then people are going to think that it was fixed or it was rigged or whatever. And so we really need to get them in there. And Lakhdar Brahimi, talking to a Dutch newspaper on Saturday, said, and I quote, "It is a mess in Iraq." When he was asked if it was possible to hold elections under current conditions, Brahimi said, quote, "If the circumstances stay as they are, I don't think so." So you have that on the one hand. On the other hand, we have this story by the by Michael J. Sneffen in the Associated Press, this today's paper. Evidence gained by torture can be used by the U.S. military. Do you get that? Now, there's a reason why we have banned. There are two reasons why we have historically, for 230 years, the entire history of the United States, for all practical purposes. I mean, we've codified. I mean, it's been part of our legal doctrine throughout most of the 20th century. But really, we've always known. There's two reasons why we don't allow testimony taken under torture. This is why the Sixth, Seventh, and Eighth Amendments are in the Constitution. And that is that, number one, once you start torturing people, if we start torturing people, other countries can torture our people. It's like the world becomes a more dangerous place. Number two, and perhaps more important, the information you get from torture, from people who are being tortured, is generally nonsense. I mean, look at the millions of women who confessed to being witches before they were put to death by the Inquisition. Were they? Look back and suspect no. But now, evidence gained by torture can be used by the U.S. military in deciding whether to imprison a foreigner indefinitely in Guantanamo Bay, the government concedes. This is incredible. Statements produced under torture have been inadmissible in U.S. courts for over 70 years. But now the Bush administration has turned reality on its head and put us in a very, very uncomfortable position around the world. This is another great harm done to America by George W.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Arrests have been made in the murder of a Teamsters Union organizer in El Salvador, but the case hasn't been totally resolved yet. Salvadoran police arrested the mother-in-law of the organizer, Gilberto Soto, and several others suspected of being involved were also arrested. Police in El Salvador say the killing was from a family dispute. Soto's mother-in-law, Rosa Elba Ortiz, is accused of contracting Soto's killing. She denies it. Teamsters president James Hoffa and AFL-CIO president John Sweeney both suspect Soto was assassinated for trying to organize workers in El Salvador, a country that has a long and bloody history of hostility to labor unions.
While American workers worry about their jobs being outsourced to India, Indians worry about the type of jobs being created in their country. A delegation of Indian labor leaders are currently touring the United States and meeting with labor leaders in this country to discuss the future of job sharing. Ashim Roy, a representative of General Electric Workers in India, says the number of jobs multinational companies destroy in the U.S. is far greater than the jobs they create in India.
Manufacturing plants and production areas in India are getting linked up in a global supply chain. And so some of the earlier forms of unionization and building up contracts and looking at labor rights or labor standards along the supply chain. And that's the real issue that we're going to really discuss with unions and with organizations here. But more than that, we also would like to address some of the issues that the debate on outsourcing has brought out and want to kind of have engagements with unions which are involved with organizing the outsourcing workers here. And in general, have discussions with people who are having a viewpoint on outsourcing.
St. Louis teachers may be on strike for Christmas. A strike authorization vote is set for December 15th. The American Federation of Teachers says even though teacher strikes are illegal under Missouri law, it won't stop the teachers from walking off their jobs if that's what they vote to do. The AFT's Mary Armstrong says America was founded on civil disobedience, so the union won't be deterred from using it if that's what the members want. St. Louis teachers are making it clear, though, that their preference is to return to the bargaining table and work out a fair and acceptable contract. St. Louis teachers are not paid as well as suburban teachers, and that's one of the issues on the table.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Consumers are nervous about jobs, and therefore they aren't shopping. The Conference Board reported last week that consumer confidence dropped for the fourth consecutive month. Walmart was one of the hardest hit retailers, with only a 0.7 sales increase in stores that have been open for more than a year. Sears and JCPenney did the best in beating Wall Street predictions. Sears posted a whopping 2.8% gain in sales, while Wall Street was predicting a decline of 0.3% for the chain.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
George W. likes to live in his own world. In fact, being Bush seems like a joyful, almost dreamlike experience. Reality, for example, never intrudes into his consciousness. And his lies, even as big as whoppers, seem most sincerely to be believed by him. I have no doubt that he thinks he served in the National Guard, for example. For his second term, George is drawing his world even tighter, moving swiftly to eliminate advisors and officials who might tell him things he doesn't want to hear, further shielding him from bothersome realities in the world. Colin Powell was quickly ushered out the door, even though he had dutifully and unwittingly lied for Bush about those non-existent weapons of mass destruction. Powell was always questioning the blind rush into the war, so George has now plucked this irritant from his administration. Condi Rice, his worshipful national security advisor, has been moved into Powell's chair, and Bush can certainly trust that she won't disturb his consciousness with anything that goes against his neocon ideology. Likewise, his longtime legal lackey, Al Gonzalez, has been dispatched to head the Justice Department, where he can grind out memos to rationalize and legalize any little old thing that strikes George's noggin. Al, you might remember, is the guy who wrote the White House memo saying that torturing Iraqi prisoners was legally okie-dokie. Then there's the CIA, which kept sending intelligence reports to the White House warning that the Iraqi invasion and occupation would have messy consequences. George didn't like to hear that, so now he's put political hack Porter Goss at the CIA helm. Goss is purging top agents who have disagreed with Bush's disastrous policies, warning all CIA employees that their job is to, quote, support the administration and its policies in our work. This is Jim Hightower saying, there. Don't you feel better knowing that George won't be bothered by any unwanted advice or unpleasant reports?
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to four real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. The battle lines are being laid out. The sides are forming. War within the Republican Party. It looks like the debate, shall we say, this battle that's going on over the intelligence reform bill is very much just the beginning. And we'll see how this plays out today and tomorrow. But what's coming up next threatens to be even wilder, assuming that Bush actually brings this forward. You'll recall during the campaign, in an effort to pander to the votes of first and second generation Mexican Americans, because, of course, he couldn't be asking for the votes of illegal aliens, right, because they can't vote, at least in theory. George W. Bush said that he was going to go ahead with a program, a guest worker program, to allow the millions and millions of Mexicans in the United States at this moment to stay here and flip their status from illegal to legal. Keep in mind, one out of 10 citizens of Mexico currently lives within the, currently lives illegally within the boundaries, within the borders of the United States, and roughly 3 million a year cross our southern border into this country illegally, by the best estimates. These are not Republican or Democratic numbers. This is not, frankly, in my opinion, a partisan issue. In fact, I'm not even sure what the Democratic Party's position is on this thing. I know that there are people demagoguing it on both sides. There are the racists who are, you know, ranting and raving about how, you know, we can't let folks in because they have, I mean, the implied subtext is because they have darker skin than Caucasians or Europeans. And then you've got folks, the nationalists, saying, you know, a nation really should just kind of operate its own economy. And by and large, I'm in that second camp. I've got to say, it may be politically incorrect. I'm frankly not sure what the official liberal slash progressive position is on immigration reform. I suspect it's one of those things that's kind of all over the map. But I think that the best thing that we can do for Mexico is not turn them into a vassal state or a state that is dependent upon providing cheap labor to the United States for their economy. And that's what's happened. See, the part of the story that doesn't get told very often is that billions of dollars from these millions of illegal immigrants in the United States, and it's not, of course, just Mexico, it's many other South American countries, but Mexico is the vast preponderance of them. Billions of dollars are being sent home to families in Mexico by people working here. And that is helping prop up the Mexican economy. And that's why Vicente Fox is so interested in this stuff. People go, you know, well, why would the president of Mexico care about whether or not people, you know, illegal aliens into the United States can work here? It's like as if George W. Bush suddenly got on a high horse saying, you know, Canada needs to accept more Americans, and they need to let them in, and they need to, you know, drop the barriers to entry. And if there are Americans illegally living in Canada, Canada needs to work out a program where those Americans who are illegally living in Canada can become legal and they can get jobs. Now, why would he do that? Well, he would, if the American economy was in such bad shape that the only way that we could survive as an economic entity was to have millions and millions of Americans living in Canada, having good-paying jobs, and sending money home. That's why he would do it. And, of course, that's not the situation. But that is the situation for Mexico. And so George W. goes down to Mexico, and Vicente Fox is you know, leaning on him. And, of course, there is a split in the immigrant community in the United States. There are a lot of people of Mexican ancestry living in the United States who came here legally or generations ago came here when it wasn't an issue. You could just essentially walk across the border, and their grandparents or their parents or their great-grandparents gave birth to their parents or grandparents here in the United States, which made them American citizens. And a lot of these folks are saying, enough already. And on the other hand, there are others who are saying, you know, this is really cool. It's, you know, it's our people coming in here. So there's kind of the racial, racial isn't the right word, the cultural, I suppose, the connection to the homeland thing that's at play, and it's at play in both sides, and it's splitting that community, and this is also splitting America. Now it's splitting the Republican Party. As I said, my take on it is that the conservative economic agenda always has been and still can be boiled down to two words: cheap labor. That's the bottom line. You have as large as possible a pool of very cheap labor, and what it'll do is it'll continuously work to drive down wages so that those who are working for a living will have progressively less and less income and less political power. And then you start changing the tax laws, as George W. Bush did in 2003, or was it early 2004? I forget which it was. The last tax cut that he passed. I think it was at the end of 2003. Where you say, and also, if somebody earns a living the way that much of the Bush family wealth is distributed and earned, and that is you invest in companies and they pay dividends, and so you earn your living by sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive, that you pay even lower taxes than those people who are out there building the roads and teaching in our schools and protecting us by, you know, by being firemen and police officers and things like that. Let them pay the whole load of taxes, of income taxes. But if you make your money just waiting for the dividend check to arrive right now, as a result of Bush's last tax cut, you only pay a maximum 15% income tax on that money. And they have come right out and said their goal is to reduce that to zero. So what do you do? You're ending up with a two-class society, a society of essentially patrilineal or inherited wealth, let's say. It's not exclusively patrilineal. And inherited wealth here in the United States, which is what the founders were rebelling against, you'll recall. Primogeniture, the idea that the oldest son inherited everything was, and entail. These laws that had to do with inheritance were among the first that Thomas Jefferson sought to overturn when he became a member of the House of Burgesses in Virginia. And were among the first that were overturned when the United States was created. So you've got Republicans and some Democrats as well, by the way. This is a conservative thing or a radcon thing, the radical conservatives. This is a radcon thing, not necessarily a partisan thing, although the Republican Party has been more taken over by radcons than has the Democratic Party. And you've got that group who says, "Hey, it's cheap labor. That's what we want. It's, you know, more corporate profits. It's a wonderful thing. Hey, you know, give us more cheap labor, more cheap labor, more cheap labor. Walmart needs more employees. We need more people to pick lettuce." On the one hand, and then you've got, on the other hand, you have Republicans of the old school. We'll call them conservatives rather than radcons. Folks like Tom Tancredo of Colorado who are saying, "Hey, wait a minute. We should have an economy. I mean, it's okay to have cheap labor. They're all in favor of that. But there are limits." They say that, you know, we should have an economy that is internally self-sustaining. We shouldn't have to depend for the survival of our economy on a continuous influx of cheap labor from outside the United States. And some of them would even go so far as to say, or exporting our jobs overseas. Now, this is a tough issue. And if you think that I'm off base on this, I'd love to hear from you. Educate me here on this. It's if I'm missing something, I don't think I am, but feel free to give us a shout, 1-866-889-8894. But here's the cleave that's coming in the Republican Party. congressional, this is an article in the Washington Times this last week, when House Republicans, by Stephen Dinan, however he says it, when House Republicans blocked the intelligence overhaul bill 2 weeks ago, some congressional Republicans said they were showing President Bush he will split the party if he goes ahead with his broader immigration reform plan. And here's Tom Tancredo, who's been on this program. We talked about this a year ago. He says it would cause a break in the party that would be extremely unhealthy for the party. I can tell you right now the feelings are deep. This is not a superficial argument with the president. Tancredo continues, we were all willing to shut up during the campaign. We were not going to attack the president. But the campaign is over and the gloves are off on this issue. This from a conservative Republican, Tom Tancredo, Republican of Colorado. Representative Elton, is it Galegi? Galegly? I'm not sure how it's pronounced. G-A-L-L-E-G-L-Y. A Republican from California. We'll say Galegly until somebody sets me straight. The next immigration issue we face will be an amnesty, he says. Representative Steve King, Republican of Iowa. Quote, if the people that are in support of border security get rolled by the president, that will be an indicator that the president's amnesty plan has better momentum in Congress. So, in other words, these guys, they're all trying to figure out, you know, how hard is Bush going to push for this? Was he just talking about amnesty and guest worker programs to get more money out of big agricultural corporations and from that part of the Hispanic community that views that as a desirable thing? To get their votes during the campaign? Or does he actually intend to do this, to create this guest worker program, to take the millions and millions and millions of largely Mexican-Americans who are illegally here in the United States and, poof, make them legal and put them on the road to citizenship? And if he does, is he going to see his party go down in flames over? This is going to be a real interesting one to watch. I'm personally predicting Bush is not going to do anything with it. I think it was just a cynical election year politics. But time will tell. Time will tell. And so will Tom Tancredo. We'll find out. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please hang up.
Having a hard time connecting with someone who cares? Try the Boys Town National Hotline at 1-800-448-3000. They'll be there to help you when you need it the most, 24 hours a day. They'll even pay for the call. Simply call 1-800-448-3000.
Boys Town National Hotline. How can I help?
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
See how they explain the inexplicable.
Watch them all debate
the undebatable.
Apparently a lie
is never liable. Time, time for a talk show screamer.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website, if you want to drop into the chat room. Where interesting conversation going on. Rama Schneider is here today, and he and I were just talking about this. He made the point, and I think it is a really good one, that NAFTA was sold to us, North American Free Trade Agreement, as a way of helping lift up Mexico. And, in fact, it hasn't fulfilled its promise, not even close. And instead what it has done is it has brought down the United States. It has actually, now we know, increased poverty in Mexico. That's the result of NAFTA. It has increased poverty. There was an initial bump and then a collapse. What it did, basically, was, and what all of these free trade agreements do, is they shift power, sovereignty, they shift power away from nations and into the hands of multinational corporations. And the multinational corporations are not interested, frankly, in whether or not there's a middle class or whether or not people are well paid. They're interested in making a profit, which is what they're supposed to be interested in. And so why would we set up the rules of the game in such a way that predictably would cause this is absolutely beyond me. This is why Ross Perot got, 18% of the vote when he was running. It's why the majority of Americans were opposed to NAFTA when Bill Clinton pushed it through. And let us not forget that it was Bill Clinton who pushed it through. I mean, it started out as a Republican bill. The discussion of it started back in the Nixon administration. Reagan was, raging about it. George Herbert Walker Bush wanted to get the thing through, but it was Bill Clinton who did it. And he had to cash in a lot of political capital, to quote George W. And the unfortunate side effect of this is that when you have a sudden infusion of legal cheap labor, it produces a strong backlash. We had the same thing in the United States during Reconstruction. After the Civil War, slaves were freed by and large. I mean, we all know that it wasn't quite that clean by any shot of the, by any stretch of the imagination. But nonetheless, there was this, suddenly a lot of people who had to work for free before now had to be paid. And there was this increase in labor, in the labor market, as it were. And what did that lead to? It led to the explosion of the KKK. It led to this absolute explosion among the white community in America of anti-black sentiment that became violent. And that racism reached its tentacles into not just our culture, but even into our laws. And I'm frankly concerned that this is going to be the next step. And frankly, I think it's already happening. This is going to be the next step with regard to the immigration thing, is that it's going to, as Americans of all races, but broadly, as Americans see their wages continue to deteriorate, because increasingly they're competing with people who are willing to work for $2 or $3 an hour, or in a lot of cities around the United States, you can pick up a crew of illegal immigrants to do house construction, for example, pay them $6 an hour, $5 an hour. They'll work for $5. Sometimes $7, $8. But these are not union jobs anymore. And as you see the middle class getting wiped out, we are going to be seeing increasingly backlash against this. Tony in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Tony, I think we've just got a couple seconds. I may have to hold you over the break.
My mind is quickly. You seem very visceral, if I may say, when that guy named Bill talked about Curry trying to make a comeback by making a tipping contribution to the Ohio elections. And also, what do you think Edwards' prospect will be? And I think my question's off here.
Okay, Tony. My concern with John Kerry is that I think that it's just over for him. He did his best. He gave it a good shot. But I don't think the people are going to be with him to come around again. And the other question was?
Edwards.
Yeah. Oh, Edwards. Okay. I'll talk to you about that right after this. Thanks for the call.
I was once in a vault while I was being robbed.
This December, the only thing riskier than stealing $160 million is having to pay it back.
With interest.
It just hurts.
What we do know is we need a high-paying job.
George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Andy Garcia, Don Cheadle, Bernie Mac, and Julia Roberts. Ocean's 12, a Steven Soderbergh film, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13 for language. Starts December 10th.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Arrests have been made in the murder of a Teamsters Union organizer in El Salvador, but the case hasn't been totally resolved yet. Salvadoran police arrested the mother-in-law of the organizer, Gilberto Soto, and several others suspected of being involved were also arrested. Police in El Salvador say the killing was from a family dispute. Soto's mother-in-law, Rosa Elba Ortiz, is accused of contracting Soto's killing. She denies it. Teamsters president James Hoffa and AFL-CIO president John Sweeney both suspect Soto was assassinated for trying to organize workers in El Salvador, a country that has a long and bloody history of hostility to labor unions.
While American workers worry about their jobs being outsourced to India, Indians worry about the type of jobs being created in their country. A delegation of Indian labor leaders are currently touring the United States and meeting with labor leaders in this country to discuss the future of job sharing. Ashim Roy, a representative of General Electric Workers in India, says the number of jobs multinational companies destroy in the U.S. is far greater than the jobs they create in India.
Manufacturing plants and production areas in India are getting linked up in a global supply chain. And so some of the earlier forms of unionization and building up contracts and looking at labor rights or labor standards along the supply chain. And that's a real issue that we're going to really discuss with unions and with organizations here. But more than that, we also would like to address some of the issues that the debate on outsourcing has brought out, and want to kind of have engagements with unions which are involved with organizing the outsourcing workers here, and in general have discussions with people who are having a viewpoint on outsourcing.
St. Louis teachers may be on strike for Christmas. A strike authorization vote is set for December 15th. The American Federation of Teachers says even though teacher strikes are illegal under Missouri law, it won't stop the teachers from walking off their jobs if that's what they vote to do. The AFT's Mary Armstrong says America was founded on civil disobedience, so the union won't be deterred from using it if that's what the members want. St. Louis teachers are making it clear, though, that their preference is to return to the bargaining table and work out a fair and acceptable contract. St. Louis teachers are not paid as well as suburban teachers, and that's one of the issues on the table.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Consumers are nervous about jobs, and therefore they aren't shopping. The Conference Board reported last week that consumer confidence dropped for the fourth consecutive month. Walmart was one of the hardest hit retailers, with only a 0.7 sales increase in stores that have been open for more than a year. Sears and JCPenney did the best in beating Wall Street predictions. Sears posted a whopping 2.8% gain in sales, while Wall Street was predicting a decline of 0.3% for the chain.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson: the care of human life and happiness and not their destruction is the first and only object of good government. I want to move on from this. I think we've made our point about immigration, and it's had a good conversation here. And it's continuing in the chat room, actually. But I want to move on to a Bush Green Watch. This is from bushgreenwatch.org. While the Bush administration and its conservative judicial appointees make a constant public show of their dedication to states' rights, their actions on environmental protection are increasingly moving in exactly the opposite direction. This is very bad news for Americans' desire for clean air, clean water, and a healthy environment. In the latest example of the say one thing but do another, the Bush administration last week filed a brief before the Supreme Court designed to immunize pesticide manufacturers from paying damages when their products cause harm. You get this? If you're a pesticide manufacturer and you manufacture and sell a product that kills people, the Bush administration wants to make sure that you can't be held accountable. The name of the case is Dow v. Bates. It involves a lawsuit brought by 29 Texas peanut farmers seeking compensation for crop damage they say was caused by a Dow AgroSciences weed killer named Strong Arm. Yeah, this case doesn't have to do with killing people. It has to do with killing plants, but I would submit that the principle is not dissimilar. According to the farmers who sued for damages in a Texas state court, the pesticide nearly wiped out their entire crop. But Dow intervened in federal court, writes bushgreenwatch.org, where it persuaded a judge to halt the farmers' lawsuit on the grounds that the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, FIFRA, preempts remedies provided under Texas state law. Hence, the farmers would be prevented from winning damages under state's common law. Now, you know, there is this thing in the Constitution, of all places, you know, strangely enough, believe it or not, there actually is this thing in the Constitution that is, let me see if I can find it here. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Here we go. It's the Eighth Amendment. I'm sorry, the Ninth Amendment. No, it's the Tenth Amendment. There you go. Yeah. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states, respectively, or to the people. The Ninth Amendment, here's the last two amendments. The Ninth Amendment basically says if a particular privilege or power was not granted or seized by the government from the people in the Constitution here that we've all agreed to, then the people have the right to it. And then the tenth Amendment says, and if the people don't claim that right, and if the Constitution doesn't claim it, then but it's, you know, some function of government, it's up to the states. It's broadly referred to as states' rights. And historically, conservatives have been largely in favor of states' rights. They've used it for some pretty awful things, like promoting segregation. But now with Dow v. Bates before the Supreme Court, the Bush Justice Department brief is arguing in favor of federal preemption over state law, which happens to be a reversal of its own established position against expansive federal preemption of state remedies under FIFRA. Fancy way of saying the Bush administration talking one way and behaving another, talking about states' rights, but behaving in a way at the federal level that's going to help, in this case, Dow Chemical, trying to intervene. I have some other environmental news here I want to get to. I do want to answer Tony's question about John Edwards. As I said, I think that John Kerry's time has come and gone to be running for president of the United States, frankly. I think, you know, John Kerry was a good guy. I supported his candidacy. He said a lot of good things. There are some things that I disagree with him about. There's a lot of things that I agree with him about. And I think he would have made a great president. And he's not the president. And I don't think that he's going to be able to successfully run again in 4 years. And I think he would be harming himself if he tried. Just my opinion. I may well be wrong. I'd like to see him stay in the United States Senate and do a great job and become a leader in the United States Senate. With regard to John Edwards, I just don't know. I would love to talk to, and I hope I have an opportunity to talk to some folks who were hanging out on the Edwards side of the Kerry Edwards campaign. In fact, we should track somebody down from that and get them on the air here, or talk to them off the air and get the information anyway. Because it seemed to me that during the election, you know, during the primaries, John Edwards was doing a great job of talking about the issues of jobs and basically economic class in America and the class warfare that the cons have been waging against working people in the United States for so very, very long. But during the presidential campaign, he seemed to just vanish. Now, was that because the media just wasn't covering him? Was it because he stayed on message? Was it because he was unwilling, or the Kerry campaign was unwilling, or Bob Shrum was unwilling to go negative and thus get headlines the way that Cheney did, where he said, you know, if these guys are elected, we're going to get hit by the terrorists, and other outrageous things? I mean, why was it? But it didn't seem to me, frankly, that John Edwards was successful in bringing a lot to that ticket. And I don't know if that is because, frankly, if that's because of a deficiency on the part of Edwards or the way the campaign was run or what. And I think, frankly, Tony, that it probably had more to do with the way the campaign was run than with John Edwards. I think John Edwards is a good guy. And, you know, we'll see where he goes with this. We'll see where he goes. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Raymond in Cement City, Michigan, has been on the line for a while here. Hey, Raymond, thank you for waiting. Welcome to the program.
I actually got a couple things, but the one thing I wanted to be sure I caught up on is you had this discussion about the basis, the real core issue in Roe v. Wade the other day. You were talking about that, and you referred back to the 1872 case, whatever it was.
Yeah, Bradwell versus State.
Well, right. Now, is there not an argument that all those issues that Bradwell versus created that decision created, were they not then trumped by the Equal Rights Amendments and the women's suffrage thing in the Constitution and so on? Does Roe v. Wade really have any sway in that issue because the constitutional amendment and the women's right to vote and all that kind of thing was taken care of?
Well, you know, the Equal Rights Amendment was never passed. The last time it was introduced was into Congress was in the year 2000 by Ted Kennedy.
Oh.
Every year they keep trying to introduce it. And the Equal Rights Amendment is one sentence. And as I recall, I may have a word off here or there, but basically it says that no laws shall be passed which discriminate on the basis of sex, period. That's all it says.
But
it has not passed.
So
it hasn't even made it out of Congress,
you're
much less,
that
the, much less to the states.
There was no constitutional amendment that covered the issue created by the 1972
that's right.
Supreme Court decision.
That's right, by Bradwell versus State. There has been none. The ERA was an attempt to do that.
Okay.
But they didn't succeed. Here's the story. Actually, it's
I just want to be clear on this when I talk to people about it, and they say, "Well, we passed these amendments for, you know, in the Constitution, the 14th or whatever it was amendment."
Let me lay it out for you. In an attempt to test the 14th Amendment, Susan B. Anthony went to her local polling station. Now, the 14th Amendment says everybody has equal protection under the law, and you would think that that would include women, right?
Right. And that's where I was coming from.
Right, and women thought it did, too. So on November 1st, 1872, Susan B. Anthony voted. And on November 12th, she wrote, "All persons are citizens, and no state shall deny or abridge the citizen of citizen rights." 6 days later, though, she was arrested for illegal voting. The judge, noting that she was a female, refused to allow her to testify, dismissed the jury, and found her guilty. She didn't have the resources of the railroads, so she couldn't appeal this to the Supreme Court, and so that stood. 1 year later, in the 1873 Bradwell versus Illinois decision, the Supreme Court the Supreme Court ruled that women are not entitled to the full protection of persons under the 14th Amendment. Justice Bradley wrote the court's concurring opinion, which means no words, and I will now quote from Bradwell versus Illinois, quote, "The family institution is repugnant to the idea of a woman adopting a distinct and independent career from that of her husband. So firmly fixed was this sentiment in the founders of the common law that it became a maxim of that system of jurisprudence that a woman has no legal existence separate from her husband, who is regarded as her head and representative in the social state." End quote. And that was the law of the land. And here's the Equal Rights Amendment. Here's the ERA in its entirety. "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." And as I said, the last time it was introduced was by Ted Kennedy in the year 2000, and it didn't make it through Congress, and so it never has made it to the states to be ratified.
So from the political standpoint, this attack on taking rights back from people who are gay, God-created people, and people who are women through Roe v. Wade, these are all basically moving towards limiting who has power and control in the country.
That's right.
To a few.
That's right. It's ultimately all about that. What we're talking about here is oligarchy. We're talking about plutocracy. And economically, it's about that as well. The whole point of creating, I mean, you say, well, why would conservatives want there to be why would they want the middle class to sink down to the level of being the working poor? The reason why is because the working poor don't have as much political power as a middle class does.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's
all
the
about
old
power.
Story as if you can eliminate the competition, then you get more of the fruits.
That's right. That's
and
right.
Even Saddam said he only needed a million people to run that country, so the heck with the rest of them.
Yeah, and that's the old byline of despots, and it's back. It's mm-hmm. back. And, you know, they put friendly face on it. They call it, conservative, compassionate conservative and moral values and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But the reality of it is the reality of it. There's no way around that.
And the reality of what they're doing is creating a baby tax, and they're also, they want more dead fetuses on the floor, because during the 90s, that all went down. Teenage pregnancies, we had education.
Well,
that's
that's the outcome of their policies.
Right.
I don't think that they really want that, but that is the outcome, and we see it.
But if you want to reframe it in the results.
Yeah, well, that's what they're unwilling to do. Good point, and I appreciate your call and
Tom, I'd like
well
to
said,
finish
Rana.
Up one thing. I just want to make a comment on, because I've talked to you about this before, and you just kind of got into it with Carrie and Edwards,
mm-hmm.
and I think the thing that I tried to get to, or some of us tried to get to in this last nomination for the Democratic Party, was that we needed somebody that could win that shared our views.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we did not pay enough attention to electability. The party leadership forced, I think, Kerry down through a lot of different things.
I disagree, Raymond. I think the mistake that everybody made was thinking that electability was the only issue. That's what happened in Iowa. And everybody was saying, well, Dean is a little too... Dean had gotten beat up by by the Club for Growth came in and spent $1 million on advertising to take out Dean because they thought that he could actually beat Bush. And, I mean, why would Republicans go into Iowa and run campaign commercials against a candidate? Obviously, because they don't want him around.
Let me give you a perspective I have on that. It's two sides of the coin, and you can't give up your values. I agree with that very, very wholeheartedly. But you got to remember is I live near Hillsdale and the birthplace of the Republican Party and Jackson and all this. And I was stumping for Clark, and I found that a lot of people would vote for Clark who didn't vote for Kerry.
Sure.
And I never believed that I would lose any of our liberal values by electing Clark.
No, I agree with you, and I think, frankly, in the final analysis, probably Clark and Dean were both more electable than John Kerry. But the perception at the time, at that point in the campaign, was that Clark was a political newbie, and that Dean was, you know, the small governor of a small state without a lot of political experience and a loose cannon, and he'd been, you know, portrayed all these bizarre ways in the media, and that John Kerry was therefore the most electable of the bunch, with John Edwards a close second, and that was the widespread perception when you go back and look at that, and I think that was a mistake. I don't think that we ever should have been not to diss John Kerry, because as I said, I think he's a good guy and he was a good candidate.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not against our candidates.
Right, but we shouldn't be making decisions about electability. I think that we need to be making decisions based on principle, or both, because I think, you know, Dennis Kucinich actually was the candidate who most closely, completely aligns with my values, and I don't believe that Dennis Kucinich was electable. You know, God bless him, but he wasn't electable.
And what happened, though, in that process, Tom, is I think that the party didn't, you know, you said like Clark was a newbie. The party didn't let us get our candidates out and really get them involved with the electorate, because I know here in Michigan, you could see it. You could see it was pushed down from the leadership, and nobody was, you know, because there's a lot of unions and organizations like that. Nobody was really talking about the candidates specifically. They were, well, I shouldn't say nobody, but I mean, there was overwhelming prevalence of the leadership in organizations and the party pushing down the message.
This is
have a caucus. This is who you go to.
Yeah, I know. And this is
and
this
when
is
I was standing there. I saw him coming in, and so we never had the opportunity to really get our candidates vetted.
I agree with you, Raymond. And this is why it is so important that people like you and me get involved. That we show up for the Democracy for America meetups. That we participate with the local Democratic Party or the local Green Party or both, and infiltrate the trade to this party and take it back and say, you know, enough of this. We want to participate in this democracy. Thank you very much. As the Republicans did 20 years ago, 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small porter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a wind feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Picket lines continue in Hannibal, Ohio, despite 17 arrests as aluminum manufacturer Ormit filed for bankruptcy and is seeking to void the steelworkers' labor agreements and impose new ones.
Right now, we're in a fight for health care and pensions. You know, it's going on across the country. Every company you hear, you know, they want them to pay for their health care. They want them to pay, lose their pensions. They're trying to take our pensions and health care from our retirees.
Jeremy Parker is the vice president of Ohio USWA Local 5724, representing half of the 1,300 union workers at the reduction plant and rolling mill.
Now, this is a fight that's not only going on right here at Ormet. It's nationwide. Every time you open a paper, somebody's taking a pension. You know, we're just standing up to them and saying, listen, if you don't want to pay us what we're worth and what our retirees have worked their lifetime for, then there's not going to be an Ormet.
Working without a contract since August 30th, Ormet employees decided to conduct a work stoppage November 22nd.
The company has took their secretarial staff, their, you know, administrative staff down into the plant. They have been doing the jobs that, you know, we left, which includes, you know, part room utility work, setting carbon. We're told that they're on a 12-hour shift in there. Then they're once they get done with that shift, they go back on the hill, do their duties there, and then sleep somewhere in between. There's like 300 of them trying to, you know, do a jobs that 1,300 of us was in there doing.
Parker says Ormet's closure would do irreparable damage to Monroe County, where it's the largest tax contributor and the largest employer.
If them plants go down, you know, Monroe County turns into a dust bowl. You know, there's not a lot of other industrial in this county. You've got a lot of little businesses. You know, these mom-and-pop stores, they depend on us every day. You know, we are their customers.
The union is waiting to hear from a bankruptcy court judge on her plans for reorganization. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Love me two times, baby. Love me twice today.
Since it's our day for hearing from dead presidents, something we don't often do but occasionally get into, and morality in government has been such a big issue, let's just hear Harry Truman's thoughts on morality in government.
Now I want to say something very important to you about this issue of morality in government. It is just as immoral to use the lawmaking power of the government to enrich the few at the expense of the many as it is to steal money from the public treasury.
Whoa! But that's what the Bush administration is doing.
That is stealing money from the public treasury. All of us know, of course, about the scandals and corruption of the Republican office holders in the 1920s. But to my mind, the Veterans Administration scandals in those days and the Teapot Dome steal were no worse, no more immoral than the tax laws of Andrew Mellon or the attempt to sell Muscle Shoals to private owners.
Now, what he's referring to there when he's talking about Muscle Shoals was the privatization. It was, you know, just plain old privatization. Today we would call it. Back then it was considered a scandal. Taking public lands.
Legislation that favored the greed of monopoly and the trickery of Wall Street was a form of corruption that did the country four times as much harm as Teapot Dome ever did. Private selfish interests are always trying to corrupt the government in this way. Powerful financial groups are always trying to get favors for themselves. Now, the Democratic administration has been fighting against these efforts to corrupt the powers of government. We haven't always won, but we have never surrendered, and we never will.
There you go. Give him hell, Harry, as what he was known as back then, Harry Truman. And in fact, this is from the speech that he gave in which he said that he would not run for president. And it's fascinating. You hear that toward the end of the speech there, he says, and I'm not going to run for president. Everybody's saying, no, please don't. Please say it's not true. A very popular guy. The Democrat who the first candidate or the first president of the United States to propose a national health care system, a national single-payer health care system. The second president of the United States to propose the exact same thing was the next president, Dwight D. Eisenhower. And he was also the last president to propose it, oddly enough. So, anyhow, that's Harry Truman and his thoughts on morality and government. It's having government work of, by, and for the people, we the people, not just of, by, and for the plutocrats. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Rama Schneider for coming in and engineering it, Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet at radiopower.org, to Ben Birch for our archives at whiterosesociety.org, to all the folks who showed up in our chat room. Great to see you all there, and thanks for the interesting conversations. And to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Do good.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France